Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Here he is, Father Time, better known as Father History right now, because he's recording everything. I don't know if we're going to talk about Billy the Kid today. I don't know if we're going to talk about Bellstar. I haven't a clue what we're going to talk about, but he'll tell us. Good morning, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb. How are you doing today?
Well, not too bad. I look forward to Tuesdays so I can sit and listen and learn from you. So what's cooking in the world of history?
Well, you know, we've talked about some famous people and some not so famous people, and today it's a not so famous person.
Oh, okay. So
you
we don't.
I'll be surprised.
We don't know who this guy is, right?
What's that?
I said we kind of talked over each other, and I apologize. So you said this is a not so famous person that maybe not everybody knows about or has heard about, right?
I would be surprised if there's hardly any of our listeners that's heard of this person.
Okay. Well, you've got the floor. So, go ahead.
Okay, Francis Slocum. Never heard of her?
Well, I've heard of Francis the Mule.
Okay. No relation.
Okay.
Nope, no relation. And this is a female, Francis Slocum.
Mm.
Born in 1773. So we're going way back, 1773 to 1847. And, you know, mostly we do Western history on this show. And, you know, back in those days, I guess that really was considered kind of the West.
Okay.
You know, because of the Indians that were still in that area where we're going to be talking. But Frances Slocum was a five-year-old little girl. And if you can picture this, she was huddling alone and scared under the stairway of her family's big farmhouse. She had just seen her mother snatch up the baby of the family and hurry outside along with two of the other children to take cover in some bushes.
Mm.
So five-year-old Francis had been told to hide indoors. Well, a few minutes earlier, a gunshot had sounded across the farmlands, and this is in Pennsylvania's Wyoming Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're familiar with that at all.
Not that much.
But the
no.
Revolutionary War was still being fought between the American colonists and the British soldiers. And Francis was actually at this point experiencing an Indian raid. Now, the Indian attacks were common in this area, where her dad, who was a Quaker, Jonathan, and her mother, Ruth Slocum, had settled the farm and raised 10 children. Now, most of the 200 residents of this valley had already been killed or had abandoned their homes out of the fear for their lives, but Jonathan Slocum wasn't afraid of the native Delaware people. So, anyway, the Delawares thought that the Slocums had turned against them and decided to strike. So, a group stormed the farm, and several Indians came into the house looking for food and useful items. Well, they found little Frances hiding and having seen her toes poking out beneath the stairs. So, the raiders carried off Frances and her 12-year-old brother, Ebenezer. Now, also taken was a young boy named Wareham Kingsley, who was a neighbor boy who just happened to be in the Slocums' yard at the time. Now, seeing this, Ruth Slocum and one of her older daughters came out of their hiding from the bushes to plead for their family members to the Indians. In fact, they pointed out that Ebenezer, her son, had a crippled foot, and so the Indians saw that this was true, and so they let him go. The Slocums urged the Indians to release Francis, but they obviously didn't do that, so they took this five-year-old little child screaming from her mother, and this was the last time that Ruth would see her daughter, even though she never gave up hope that Francis would return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1778, it would be 60 years before Francis Slocum would see any member of her family, her birth family, again. She didn't know that the Indians actually returned to the farm 6 weeks later and killed her father and her grandfather.
Mm.
But remaining members of the family and their neighbors searched for Francis in the weeks and the years to come, but they found no sign of her. Now, 6 years after the kidnapping, this young boy, Wareham Kingsley, that had been taken also, he found his way back to civilization because they had let him go. But he didn't know what had happened to Francis. So, but there was some relief because he told them that Frances had been treated kindly, that the Indians had given her food, carried her when she was tired, given her moccasins to wear. And, you know, again, I've got a little five-year-old grandson right now, and I'm just thinking of him being taken from his mother and, you know, hopefully being taken care of. But anyway, Mother Ruth Slocum sent her sons, Giles and William, to Niagara Falls in 1784 and then to Ohio. And in both places, white people who had been taken as children by Indians had been let go, and they were actually searching for their families. But the Slocums didn't find Frances either time. Now, the brothers looked for a girl with a missing fingertip because Frances had been involved in a farm accident as a young girl.
Okay.
She'd actually lost part of the end of one of her fingers. So the members of the Slocum family continued to travel New York, Ohio. They talked to children who had survived capture by Indians, but they just couldn't find any information about Frances. Well, Ruth Slocum, the mother, died about 28 years after the disappearance of her little girl. But she asked her children to continue to look for their lost little sister. Well, half a century later, 50 years later, and several hundred miles from the time and place of Frances' kidnapping, on the banks of the, and I'm going to get this right, Mississinewa River.
Oh, easy for you to say.
Yeah. Anyway, a trader, an interpreter named James Miller, suggested he was with a companion, an Indian agent named Colonel George Washington Ewing, that they seek lodging for the night at the home of a white woman living among the Miami Indians. Now, that night, two women served dinner, and Ewing talked with one of their husbands. However, it was an elderly woman also at the table who most interested him. They had good conversation in the language of the Miami, and was kind of surprised when she signaled that she wanted to talk to him later when everybody had fallen asleep. Well, the story that Ewing heard was remarkable. This old woman told him that she was a white woman who had been taken from her family by Indians. Now, her memories were distant and few, but in six decades, she had not forgotten her name or the image of her father or the family's big house by the Susquehanna River. She also remembered small details about her brothers and sisters. Her Miami name was McConaughey, and the old woman revealed that she had been born to a white family as Frances Slocum. So here we are 50, 60 years later, and this guy is meeting Frances Slocum. Now, Frances had, you know, she was kind of rough looking. She'd been living and working outdoors, but she wasn't unhappy. She actually had a pretty good life.
Okay.
When she'd gotten to the village when she was 5 years old, an older Indian couple whose own child had died, they adopted her when she'd arrived at their camp with the Indian raiders. Well, she'd had a happy childhood. They moved quite a bit, as the Indians often did, through the Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, near the Niagara in Canada, kind of ended up in the Fort Wayne, Indiana area. And her Miami husband, his name was Shepakona.
Oh, boy. I'm glad you really took some time and said that carefully.
Yes. I'm going to have to repeat that, too, so I hope I can pronounce it again.
Oh, I am, too.
So he was a war chief at the Osage Village. But anyway, her marriage had produced four children, and she had two sons that had died, but she had... but at this time she had three children. Well, Frances asked this Colonel Ewing not to tell anybody about this until after she died, because she was afraid that she would be taken away again from her Indian family, her Miami family. But she did want to share her story with someone before she died. Well, this story was too exciting for Ewing to keep secret, so he tried to contact the old woman's relatives, and he wrote down what Slocum had told him, mailed it to a Lancaster, Pennsylvania area, asking that the letter be delivered to anyone with the surname of Slocum. Well, the postmaster thought it was a strange thing to ask, so he just put it away. And about 2 years later, another postmaster found this letter and took it to the local newspaper. Well, the letter was published, and a friend sent a copy of this article to Joseph Slocum, who was Frances's younger brother. Now, it's been almost 60 years since the kidnapping, but this incident had not been forgotten. The family had promised their mother that they would keep looking for their sister. So Brother Joseph, Brother Isaac, and his sister Mary traveled. And again, here they are all in their 60s, you know. But they set out for this Miami village, which is near the present-day Peru, Indiana. And I don't know where that is, really. But when they got there, the brothers explored the town, and they contacted a merchant by the name of James Miller. Well, when Miller met Joseph and Isaac, he immediately connected them to Francis because there was a huge family resemblance.
Okay.
Well, Miller took the Slocum brothers to the village to see Francis, and after 60 years, Francis no longer spoke English.
Oh.
And she was pretty skeptical because that these men were her brothers, because other white people had come and tried to claim that they were her long-lost family. But Joseph and Isaac told Francis that they recognized her by her missing fingertips. Well, Francis warmed up to the men and invited them to her home, and through an interpreter, most likely this James Miller, the merchant, Francis described her life among the Delaware and the Miami people, and she had distant memories of her abduction, but she didn't like to talk about it. And she remembered other children who were taken from the neighboring farms in Pennsylvania. Two of them, she said, had been killed because they cried constantly. And I've heard that before, that, you know, they take some of these little kids, and if they're a little bit fussy or ornery, they just do away with them.
My.
But eventually, Frances learned the language of her captors and in the Delaware tribe.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Well, Slocums wanted their sister to return east with them for a visit with their family, but Frances didn't want to go. She told her husband before he died that she would not leave her Indian family and friends. And she also said she wouldn't know how to behave. She'd been all these years with the Indians. She was basically an Indian, really. But Frances did travel back into town where her sister Mary waited, and I guess the first visit was kind of brief. They didn't really take to each other right off the bat, but the next day Frances and her children came back into town, and they stayed for 3 days, and Frances still didn't want to talk about her capture very much for whatever reason. But anyway, after the reunion, they all returned to their homes, and a few years later, George Slocum, who was a nephew to Frances, visited, and actually the following year he moved to live near Frances and her family, in her Miami family. Anyway, he would come to hear a lot about her life, including information about her marriages. And he wrote some of this down, which I think is invaluable when somebody actually writes something down.
Mm-hmm.
But he quoted Mary, that Mary said that, my father was a Delaware, and I thought I should marry a Delaware. And she said, this Indian came and wanted me to be his wife, and my father said, well, okay. He asked the Indian, do you love this squaw? And he says, yes, I do. And so he let him get married, but Frances said he was mean, so she went back to her father. Well, the Indian came back and said, you know, I'll be better, I'll take care of you. So she went back with him a second time, but he was still mean and probably beating on her. And so she went back to her father, and basically she never saw this first husband again.
Mm-hmm.
I think she may have gone into battle and been killed.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there was tension between the white settlers and the native groups back then. And Frances was growing into womanhood, and but she still felt the tension because she was a white woman among the Indians. But they accepted her. And one day she says that her and her parents were going down to a river, and they came to a place where there had been a lot of fighting, and there were a lot of dead people, Indians. And she said, we saw one young man who was dressed like a chief. He was wounded badly, but they wanted to help him, and they did what they could to heal his wounds. Well, he stayed with them for quite a while, and during that time, Francis and this Indian chief spent a lot of hours together, and he was of the Miami tribe, and of course the Indian parents were Delawares. But anyway, Francis fell in love with him, and he fell in love with her, and so they were married, and so Francis and her husband,
here we go, folks, look out. Everybody cover up your children's ears. He's going to try it again.
I'm going to give this a try. Shepa Kona. I think that's right.
I hope so.
Anyway, they went back to Fort Wayne to live, and when her parents died, the Miami Indians became her people. Well, Shepa Kona and Francis moved with their first child. They found a nice place to live. They had a couple more sons. The family grew corn, squash, fruits. They raised horses. And they lived a pretty peaceful, hardworking life.
Okay.
And, you know, you don't hear a lot about that, but some of the Indians, you know, they weren't all killed or sent to reservations. Some of them had a very nice, pretty nice life.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Frances told the Slocum, she said, the Indians knew I was a white woman, and some of the traders knew that I was, but they didn't want to know where I came from, and I was the only white woman among the Indians, and most of them didn't pay any attention.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1840, the Miamis were made to give up their land and finally to move, and but Frances didn't want to move. So she asked her white brothers what she should do. Well, they said, you need to talk to the congressman as a white woman. So in 1845, she asked the U.S. government for special consideration, and she argued that she and her offspring should be allowed to continue to live on a section of land that was granted to them. Well, the congressman supported her, and the U.S. Congress actually granted her request to keep her and her family on the property that she had been given.
Okay.
To keep. So, anyway, George Slocum, the nephew, he brought his family to live with Frances, like I say, and he talked with Frances about Christianity, and Frances said she believed in a great spirit who had given them blessings while they lived and would reward them in the afterlife, and it was this good spirit that caused the maple trees to give the maple syrup and sugar, and the same spirit that caused the corn to grow and bring forth the good ears. And anyway, in 1847, Frances was involved in an all-night dance as part of a Thanksgiving celebration, and she was 76 years old. And anyway, afterwards she became sick. She died in 1847. She had a Christian burial. She was buried with a brass kettle and a cream pitcher next to her husband and sons in the Indian cemetery near her home.
I'll be.
And a pole with a white flag was raised over her grave so that the Great Spirit would know where she was.
Oh, man. And you did a lot of research on that.
That's the story of Frances Slocum, which, like I say, I'll be surprised if anybody's heard about her.
You know, one of the things that I was... One of the things... We have a little problem with a delay here this morning. I don't know. Are you on a cell phone this morning?
No, phone.
Oh, okay, boy, I'm having a little delay. I apologize for that. One of the things I noticed, and I wanted you to comment on this, is that in history, some of the stories that you always go through on our weekly meeting right here, some of the names, some of the old names are almost non-existent. I was reading a story someplace in a newspaper about a month ago that some of the old names like Oscar and Homer and Ebenezer, like you had here this morning, some of those old names are almost completely extinct. Would you agree?
Yes, and me personally, I like some of the old-fashioned names, you know, Samuel and Betsy and Sarah, some of the old Bible names even, you know. One thing that's interesting, too, and I didn't mention this in the story because I couldn't pronounce it, but her Delaware name was, I can't see it here, but it was a different name, and then when she went to live with the Miamis, that's when they changed her name to another Indian name.
Now, was it the Miami Heat, or was it the Miami Dolphins?
I think it was Shaquille or something.
Oh, okay. And, you know, one of the terminology that you used, Doc, was the word squaw. And there, in the last 5-6 years, there's been such an uproar by the PC police that we need to eliminate certain words and that they're offensive and everything. The word squaw is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's an Algonquin Indian word, and it meant nothing derogatory. It referred to a brave's wife as a squaw. Why all of a sudden in the last couple of years do you think that the PC police have tried to turn it into a dirty connotation?
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
That squaw is a not a derogatory term by any means.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a I guess it, really an honorable name for a woman who is the wife of an Indian chief.
That's
or,
right.
We have talked about it regarding some of the mountain men, and some of those squaws, I'm going to use that word because that's what it was, they, when they went back with their mountain men husbands to civilization, they were still referred to as a squaw, but many of them were wealthy. They were associated with some of the higher-ups, if you want to call them that, of the communities. And, you know, it kind of bothers me a little bit that they want to change the name. I can't remember where it was, a place called Squaw Peak somewhere.
That's right. Right here in Idaho, there wasn't there a Squaw Butte that they wanted to change, I think.
Is that what it was?
I think so, yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
You know, I have a hard time with that because, it's, you know, if they really knew their history, they'd realize that it's not a derogatory term.
That's right.
It's an honorable name when you refer to them as a squaw.
Absolutely. So, and we will not, and we've already touched on it this morning, both Dr. History and myself have refused under public pressure to ever be politically correct.
No, history is what it is, and I mean, you can't sweep it under the carpet. And one thing I will say, I did find a book about captives, white captives, a year or so ago, and it went into some pretty gruesome details
right.
of some things that happened, and it was bad enough that I did not want to have it on this show.
Well, and, you know, like one day. Again, I apologize for the delay. I just can't stand this electronic delay we've got this morning for some reason. But on one program, you backed me up out of the bus pretty hard, so I appreciate your comments this morning. Thank you.
I don't remember that.
I do. But, you know, you always do such a wonderful job in the studies of these shows. And like last week, Billy the Kid, this week talking about Frances Slocum. I had never heard of the lady before, and it sounds like she had a wonderful life on really two frontiers, the white frontier and the Indian frontier. And What about next week? What have you got planned for next week real quick?
You know, it's a secret that I don't even know yet.
Oh, well, unwrap the parchment and read it, and I'll look forward to having you back on, my dear friend.
That'll happen about next Saturday or Sunday.
All right. God bless you, Dr. History. Dr. Ken Turner, have a wonderful day. Thank you very much.
You have a good day, Zeb.
All right. Thank you.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.